It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
This. What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mask.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Hour number two, Felger and Maz. Again, Mike is out today, so I'm in the a-hole chair. Christian Arcand is filling in for Murray. He's on the B-side. Sean Silver's here to give us headlines. We got Greg Bedard in studio to talk Patriots. Already done an hour with Greg. We'll do another one with him. And so I told you I want to get to all the sort of the quote-unquote controversy surrounding the Patriots, if you want to call it that, the infighting, Brady v. Belichick, all of that stuff. And what better guy to take us there than Carlton in Tampa? Carlton, what do you got?
Hey, when the evil toolbox made the huge error in sitting Malcolm Butler due to his personal vindictive vendetta, his only hope of regaining control would have been to ship Gronkowski out and really try to rein Brady in this springtime. But unfortunately, the crap Brady wing castrated the evil Bill Belichick. So now we got a preseason Funhouse Amusement Park down in Foxborough, and during the regular season, it's going to be Brady working with his cast of misfit toys, a.k.a. that grab bag of busted receivers he's got there. But by the end of the season, the evil Grinch is actually going to be banished from Fooville, guys. The thing is doing the Seattle Seahawks replay, only it's going to be a lot faster. Guys, the Death Star has self-imploded, and Darth Vader has been neutered. It's over, guys. The dynasty's gone. You're going to have to get used to it.
Okay. Carlton in Tampa calling, as he usually does. So, all right, Greg, where do we stand with the whole, Patriots controversy, Brady v. Belichick? Is it gone forever?
No, I think it's still there. I mean, as far as I know, it hasn't been put to bed yet. I do think that it's a good sign that Belichick has sort of, incorporated a little bit more fun, levity to training camp and all that stuff. So, maybe that's the little peace offering. But, I heard in the offseason that Belichick had a chance, or at least people were trying to get him to, come halfway on Guerrero and sort of relinquish a little bit of that. And he wouldn't do it. And Guerrero still, I haven't seen him at practice or anything like that. I mean, he's been around the building just like he always has been. But as far as he used to be, omnipresent at practice, at games, on the sideline, all that stuff. And we still haven't seen that.
Okay, so you've seen less of him actually in camp, because there are reports out there that Guerrero's been around as if to say everything's fine.
Yeah, there was a report. That report was, it's nothing different from last season. I mean, Guerrero was not, banned from the building. He was still allowed, I think, just to work on Brady in certain places of the building.
Right.
But he was still allowed in. It's not like he was banned or anything like that. So that report, was obviously from a reporter who hasn't really been around.
Why do you think Bill's doing things differently this camp? Why does it seem like there's a difference now than maybe you've seen over the last 18 years? Is there sort of a root to it outside of the Brady stuff, or is it just that?
No, I mean, largely it hasn't been all that much different. I mean, I will say that, continuing off of last year, a lot of these practices aren't really that competitive, which is, you know, as a guy who's been covering the league full time since 2004, it kind of drives me crazy. I mean, but maybe this is the new way of the NFL and the contact and the practice rules and all that stuff. I mean, maybe they're going to, maybe they changed from last year where now they're going to sort of like ramp up as the season gets closer, sort of take it easy largely, and then ramp up. Maybe they're going to do that. I don't know. But to this point, it hasn't been, you know, it's not rock 'em and sock 'em like some of the training camps of the past. And, you know, so that's one of the big differences. But I can't tell you why Belichick has sort of changed. I mean, you know, we're going to have to see all that works out.
So, Greg, I've said that the cracks and fractures, if that's what you want to call them, that exist in this whole thing, okay, that if they're going to manifest themselves in any way, will come up during times of adversity, and particularly if there's like, you know, after the whole Malcolm Butler thing, if Belichick makes some sort of questionable coaching decision akin to 4th-and-2 during the regular season, it would be more likely that someone like Brady privately or Gronk or whoever else would be sitting there going, you're going to be kidding me again? Like after the Super Bowl, he's going to pull this? And that to me is how it would manifest itself. There's no better group. There's never been a better group at being able to block stuff out, compartmentalize, and focus on the task. So is it a legit concern that this stuff could bite them in the ass somewhere along the line? Or do you think that they're focused enough, experienced enough to endure it no matter what?
No, I mean, I think there's a chance that if, you know, if in stressful times, if things are not going well, you know, sort of like Brady snapping on McDaniels last year in Buffalo, what happened at the, you know, at the Super Bowl, then, you know, it could end up costing them in some way. So I think it is a concern. But I mean, if things go well and they're rolling through the regular season, we won't see any signs of it. They'll do just fine.
Hey, speaking of Josh McDaniels, I'd love your take on this. Why did he come back? Why did he leave the Colts head coach job just sitting there like that? He came to clean out his office at Gillette, and Bill and the Crafts were there waiting for him, and they said something to him and got him to stay. I feel like that story kind of got brushed aside with all this other drama, but doesn't that sort of imply that they told him something that made him want to not go to take a head coaching job, to stay here as though this job may be yours sooner rather than later?
I can understand why people draw that conclusion, but from what I heard, that has not happened, that Robert did not say you are the head coach in waiting. You know, I think it was definitely Robert and Jonathan's end game to say, you know, we're not going to leave ourselves like, you know, the Giants did when all of a sudden, you know, Belichick went to the, where did he go? To the Browns. Mm. And then Parcells all of a sudden says, for health reasons, I'm retiring. And you're left with Ray Handy or whoever the heck that guy was with the Giants after Parcells. I mean, the Crafts do not want to leave themselves like that. So I think that was their end game, to sort of give them protection in case, you know, something happens, whether Belichick says, that's it, I'm fed up. You know, Robert's getting too involved in things or whatever, and I'm leaving. This wasn't part of the deal. So I think that was Kraft's end game, but I don't think that was communicated to Josh. I think it was, you know, look, we really value you. If we give you, you bump up your salary, we guarantee it for this many years, all that stuff. Would you think about staying here more? And that sort of thing from people around Josh. I just heard it was finally somebody said, we really appreciate you, Josh, and we really like what you do here, and here's you can be rewarded for it. And that's what I heard it was. And I, in fact, I've heard from people around Josh that Josh still has the aim of being a head coach very soon, and that may not be here.
Really?
Yeah.
Might not be here. Probably won't be in Indianapolis, because I can't imagine they'd want to get smoked like that again.
I just know he has not, you know, it's not like he's sitting there waiting for Belichick to hang him up, because nobody knows when that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen after this year. And I don't know how long Josh wants to wait. I think it's very much, I would say it's up in the air on whether or not Josh is here long term to fill in Bill's shoes.
See, I also think he has to hold that over the Crafts a little bit. And when I say that, I mean, if there is
Bill or Josh?
Josh. If there's a wink, wink, nod, nod, you're the next guy, just sit tight. Okay, fine, no problem. But if you don't move your ass, then I'm going somewhere else. Because what's he going to do, be held hostage? If he wants to be a head coach, then, you know, it's got to happen sooner rather than later. Do you have any theories on how long Belichick is here? Because everybody has a theory. Well, it's a year. It's 2 years. I think it's this year and he's done. Do you have any theories?
No. I mean, nothing would surprise me whether he hangs it up after this year or whatever. Not, I wouldn't be shocked. I still think he's going to outlast Brady. But that's just me. Of course, that's stuff that I've been hearing since, you know, 2010. You know, that there's some you know, a little bit of self-confidence involved about, you know, everybody says, yeah, well, Belichick's never really won anything without Tom Brady. Well, you know, I think Bill was setting it up to win with somebody else with Tom besides Tom Brady. And Tom Brady just screwed up the timeline. It wasn't anybody's fault. Tom just, he's been terrific. And so I think he's going to outlast Brady, but that's me.
Okay, Matt's in Hanover. Let's talk about the wide receiving core. Go ahead, Matt.
Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Angelo. I'm sorry. Angelo and Everett. Go ahead.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Greg, I want to talk to you about an outside presence that the Patriots need. I would take Dez Bryant on a one-year deal because you haven't really had an athletic wide receiver on the outside since Moss. Do you think that they could, Bill would call him and say, listen, come here for this much, and we know what Dez Bryant can do on the field. It's just a matter of corralling his ego. And what do you think, that could that happen?
I think it's possible that it could happen. I think, you know, in my mind that it hasn't happened by now, it tells me, and there have been reports, that Dez wants to get paid for this year, that he's not just going to take a cut rate value and just, you know, the 1 year prove it. If I were Dez, I would be begging the Patriots to take him for 1 year. I'll play for whatever. And so we can get one last chance at a big contract after this year is up. I mean, I would do, you know, what Moss did. And I still think Dez can play. I am not one of these that say he's done this and that. Look, that offense in Dallas is not very complicated. It's not very good. They had to dumb it down for Dak Prescott. And I still, you know, it was basically all, you know, one-on-one ISOs on the side and, you know, going off play action and going off Zeke. You know, in New England, you don't have to worry about that. I mean, there's so much going on and play fakes and everything is designed to get people one-on-one deep down the field or in advantageous one-on-one, you know, matchups, and I think they would do that.
Do you think it's true, as the caller said, that they haven't had an athletic guy on the outside since Moss?
Didn't they just have one?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, Brandon Cooks was a pretty good athlete.
I mean, exactly. Yeah. So he wasn't tall.
Right.
But he's athletic.
Right. And he, look, you know, people say, well, Dez can't win one-on-one anymore. Well, neither could Brandon Cooks. I mean, Cooks could, you know, win down the field against a slower guy or, you know, play action. All of a sudden you give him a step, he's gone, that sort of thing. But when it came time when Edelman and, or, you know, I forget who was out last year, might have been Amendola. At some point, somebody was out, and it was like the Miami game. I mean, nobody was getting off man coverage, and that is still a big concern for this team, is that do they have enough guys who can beat man coverage, you know, in the biggest games? And, you know, Cooks wasn't able to do it last year, and I think that's part of the reason why the Patriots said, yeah, we're not going to sign you to a long-term extension.
So one of the guys who does beat man coverage is Edelman. Who,
no question.
Yeah, who will miss the first four games. Bedard had a little tete-a-tete exchange with Edelman earlier in camp. We'll play that when we come back.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
Alex Guerrero, he offered a statement shortly after your suspension. What's your relationship like with him and your confidence in what he does?
You know, what's in the past is in the past. I love Alex. Ultimately, I'm worried about just going out here and playing football. I'm not here to talk about and make a headline on something. I'm just here playing football, buddy.
Football, buddy.
Buddy, buddy.
Who is the ass hat reporter asking Edelman that stuff?
I don't know.
Huh? Craig Bedard in today of Felger and Mass. Christian Arcand co-hosting. Sean Silver's here to give us headlines. So that's your, was Jules pissed at you? Was Edelman pissed at you?
No, he was just sort of having fun. And right after that, as he was leaving, I went up and I said, Jules, I had to ask. And he's like, yeah, no problem. Like I said, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to address it. He's like, yeah, it's cool. It's not a problem.
So. Do you feel like Brady and Edelman both, and we'll play the Brady sound for you in the exchange with Ben Volum, which everyone's heard by now. I thought they would defend Guerrero more than they have.
Well, that's why I asked the question. Like, I thought, you know, and I was trying to figure out how to phrase the question the right way. But if I were Edelman and Alex Guerrero didn't have anything to do with it and people were attaching Guerrero to Edelman's suspension and stuff like that, I would have said, I love Alex. He had absolutely nothing to do with this. This is my own personal mistake. I'm very sorry that he got grouped into this. It's unfair to him, and I don't think anybody should do that because I know what happened, and it was my fault. And that would have been the end of it, but we didn't hear that.
I don't think Edelman had to say that. I mean, Guerrero came out with a statement right after the rumor leaked out. Well, not the rumor, but the appeal leaked out. Guerrero had a statement up before Edelman did, and it was a really condescending statement. I'm very disappointed in you, Julian. We do everything the right way here, but you know, this was a bad choice and a bad decision. I'm surprised Edelman was that cordial about it.
Well, I mean, I just think that, you know, look, if I did something that reflected badly on somebody that I quote unquote love, you know, even if this person released a statement that sort of, you know, knocked me a little bit,
and you'd apologize for it.
Yeah, I would own it. Well, you know, when he's talking about how that whole interview was about him being accountable and things like that. Like, I would have owned it. I would have been like, don't even mention Alex Guerrero and my suspension in the same sentence because he had nothing to do with it.
I mean, it's not apples to apples, but when Brady aired out McDaniels in Buffalo, you know what he did a couple days later? He apologized.
Yeah.
He went to the, I don't want to say he held a press conference.
I think it was his weekly press conference.
It was his weekly, and he went out of his way to say, I want to apologize to Josh and his family. And you know why? Because he knew he was wrong, and he acted like an asshat.
Yep.
And so he said, you know, I really blew up. It had nothing to do with Josh, and I took it out on him. So he apologized, especially when I think McDaniel's family was right in the front row there and saw the whole thing. So Brady felt like a donkey. The fact that Edelman didn't do it, like, see, again, because I always think the worst, Greg.
What? No.
It's just,
really?
I can't help it.
You?
Okay, it's just the way I am. People are people. That's just, they make mistakes, and they do things they shouldn't do. So the fact that he didn't go out of his way to try to clear Guerrero gives me further reason to believe that, well, maybe there was something going on there. And Brady's unwillingness to sort of go near Guerrero either, I thought, was odd. And this gets to the whole exchange with Ben Volen, which we'll play here quickly. Brady wouldn't dig in and defend Guerrero publicly either, and I know he has in the past. But nonetheless, here's the exchange between Ben Volen of the Globe and Brady.
Tom, when Julian tested positive, a lot of people connected it to Alex Guerrero. Just what's your reaction to that? Do you think it's fair?
I have no comment. It's just ridiculous.
Tom,
I'm out.
See you guys.
I mean, why wouldn't these guys say, hey, fellas, you know, you guys are making some pretty big jumps here. We believe in this guy. He's been great for me. There's nothing there. Look all you want. There's nothing there. Like, I found that peculiar that they wouldn't do that.
I don't disagree with that. And actually, I think the theme of this offseason largely has been how many chances all of these people had to put an end to all of this stuff. And whether it's Belichick, Brady, Edelman, nobody did it. Never. Not once. Bill talked twice at the owners' meetings, you know, never said anything that put to the rest their whole thing. Brady gave an interview to Oprah, gave an interview with Jim Gray at that, you know, wacko conference. And, you know, when Brady's had opportunities to talk to the media here, Brady was asked in that same press conference, what do you think about the talk about, you know, whatever, the discord between you and Belichick?
Him and Belichick,
I don't have any thoughts. What kind of answer is that?
Right,
you know,
I have no thoughts.
If it's ridiculous and there's nothing to it, say, you know, quite frankly, guys, I've seen some of the coverage this offseason, and you guys all couldn't be further from the truth. Bill and I, do we have a perfect relationship? No. Do we sometimes get on each other's nerves? Yes. But, you know, is there any big fracture or anything like that? No, it's ridiculous, and I think you guys should move on to another topic, that sort of thing. I mean, and look, this goes back to the Wickersham story and some of the reports that I had in the aftermath of that, and Tom Curran had too. You know how many opportunities these guys have had to put this stuff to bed, and none of them have done it?
Oh, my gosh. It's over and over again. They've had a million chances, Greg. And look, Sunday night, I did Sports Final with Mike Reese of ESPN. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you and Reese know each other well.
Yep.
So, and we all respect Mike's work. So Mike said at one point during the Sports Final appearance, you know, that in his mind, he thinks that Brady didn't answer the question about Guerrero because if he did so, it would have been lending credence to, quote, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but to media commentary. In other words, the only people who have drawn links between the Edelman suspension and Guerrero are media people like us here on this show. Shaughnessy wrote about it, certainly. And so that if Brady then addresses it, it fuels the theory that there is a connection. And so he just dismisses it entirely. I don't look at it that way.
I don't either.
I look at it as he had an opportunity to jump in there and say, what the hell are you guys talking about? Where do you guys just make this stuff up out of thin air and you think it's fact? Where's the proof? What are you talking about?
Right.
And where's the proof is probably a bad way to say it because it's almost like you're challenging someone to go dig.
Right.
But you know what I mean. I think he had the chance to jump in and say, guys, you guys make some big leaps. And Edelman had the chance and nobody did it. And I find that bizarre. Like, to me, it just makes me more suspicious.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, I just think that, you know, I obviously respect Mike. I disagree with him on this point that, you know, I think that, look, Julian Edelman, whether it's Tom versus Time or how many times has Julian Edelman talked about Mr. Miyagi and all this stuff, and his trainer is Alex Guerrero. He got popped for PEDs, you know, however he tested positive. Obviously, there's going to be a connection there. People are going to say, well, this is the guy who's in charge of, as far as we knew, in charge of Julian off the field and his preparation for the season, and something went wrong. I mean, that's just going to happen with anybody. It's like if one of my writers at BostonSportsJournal.com gets busted for plagiarism, what is nobody going to criticize me for that? Of course they are, and it's going to be valid. I mean, but does that mean that that's what I condone? And that's no, and I would say that. But, you know, obviously if some athlete is working with a specific trainer and that athlete is it violates the league substance abuse policy, people are going to ask questions or at least put a sentence that says Julian Edelman, who works with TB12 and Alex Guerrero. You know, it's just, that is going to happen. That is part of the deal of being a professional athlete.
Could it also be, Greg, that 3 years ago, Tom Brady at a press conference was asked for about 30 straight minutes. Reporters called him a cheater to his face. They said, well, how'd you let the air out of the balls? Are you a cheater, Tom Brady? Our hero, are you a cheater now? I mean, you remember that thing. It was 30 minutes of him getting called a cheater to his face, and he answered those questions affably. He smiled. He chuckled. He was sincere. He was honest, and that didn't go away. So maybe this is the new normal. Now, you know, someone accuses you of cheating or implies that your trainer is untoward or something like that. Just shut it down. No more nice press conferences. Now we just cut it right off.
I mean, maybe, but I mean, I'd still think if there are no connections and, you know, say this was Julian's personal fault and he said, I have to be accountable, that sort of thing, then just own it and say, I mean, if you're asked, like I asked Julian about Alex Guerrero, just say he has absolutely nothing to do with this. This was my own personal mistake. It doesn't reflect at all on Alex Guerrero. I love Alex. I'll continue to go to him, and he had nothing to do with this.
Okay, Greg, as usual, Patriots fans, when this whole thing went down with Brady and Volan, you know, their underwear started to creep up their legs and, you know, started to ride up on them, and they got all, you know, agitated about it. And so my question to you is this. Edelman's the one that got suspended. Brady was the one that was asked about the Edelman suspension and the connection to Guerrero. Is that question out of bounds?
No, I mean, look, his name and face is on the facility where Julian Edelman gets treatment. Now, would I ask the question that specific way? And, you know, for, you know, to talk about people have connected Julian Edelman, you know, the suspension to Alex Guerrero. You know, I don't know if anybody, it's not like somebody directly did that, said that because he went to TB12. And Alex Guerrero, he tested positive. So I just wouldn't have worded the question that way. But the general sentiment about Tom Brady needing to back up his guy and Guerrero, yeah, I think that was valid.
I mean, to me, it was in bounds. The question's totally in bounds. if Brady's going to have a very public relationship with this guy and go into business with him and go out there and sell us nuts and books and all kinds of stuff, championing the method, and then the guy is training other players on the team and one of them gets popped for PEDs, Brady's going to get asked about it. Like, the fact that Brady stormed off, I just personally thought, and I'm rambling, I thought Brady acted like a child. I did. I thought he acted like a little kid. He didn't like the question, so he stormed off. Now, it's possible he didn't like the person who asked the question, or he didn't like the Globe. Because the Globe is the one that, you know, the Holler story a couple of years ago on the foundation, the Brady Foundation, et cetera. That could be part of it, too. I just was surprised that Brady seemed surprised by the question. Like, to me, the question was totally in bounds.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Okay, we're going to get Greg's thoughts here on a number of things going on down there at camp, things we haven't touched on yet. We'll do that in a moment, please. But first, we will take a couple of phone calls. Michael's in Medford. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, it was stated on our previous Felger and Maz show that Josh McDaniels' chances of being a head coach in the NFL were just about nil after pulling that stunt with Indy. So today I hear that Belichick may stay and stay longer than Brady. So my question would be, getting a head coach job elsewhere in the NFL for Josh, is the NFL time heals all wounds, or does McDaniels retire, or does he play the waiting game with the Pats if they have no promise for him either? I was kind of curious of what his options would be if the damage is already done.
Okay, so, no, Michael, it's a good question. If you're another team, Greg, after McDaniels pulled that 180 and bailed out on Indy, and the move, by the way, was so poorly received, his agent dumped him.
Yeah.
Yep.
His agent dumped him. I mean, as I've said, an agent dumping you is like the worst thing that could ever happen. That's like a hooker telling you no. Like, thanks, but no thanks. Like, sorry, you don't make the cut.
I don't want your money.
So do you think that if McDaniels were to go out on the market again, let's just play the game. If he were to go on the market again in the offseason, would there be a team willing to hire him?
I think there would be. I mean, considering his background, his ability with quarterbacks, I'm not concerned about that. Now, would it be as big a market before? No. And will Josh have to do some smoothing over? Yes, he's going to have to do that. But also remember that the NFL changed the hiring rule this offseason. It's almost basically the Josh McDaniels rule, where you can now hire a coach immediately. You know, they can stay on at their former job, but you can announce, ink the contract, all that stuff. So Josh had, you know, the part of the deal was Josh had to wait until the Patriots were done to actually sign the contract and be gone to Indianapolis. So that is no longer there. There is now the Josh McDaniels rule because of that. So maybe that makes things a little bit easier.
I always sort of thought that after his last stint as a head coach in Denver, that would really sink his stock and that he was probably just more comfortable being a coordinator. He gets another opportunity. And I think the year before even, right, the Niners and a couple other teams were in on him. They wanted, and he decided, no, I'm going to stay. But then to hire assistants, you know, to get ready to go out there, only thing left to do is clean out your office. And then you bail right then. I mean, I can't imagine anybody wanting to take another chance on him.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly valid. I can see why you could say that. But the NFL is different. I mean, the NFL, I mean, they just don't. If they think that this guy is the next Bill Belichick, and look, Bill Belichick didn't have the greatest, you know, hiring employment history before he got to the Patriots.
That's a good point.
And, you know, so, you know, maybe he's just totally Bill Jr. here in terms of, you know, Bill spurned the Jets, Josh spurned the Colts, then look what happened. So I think he's still very much a viable candidate, and I think people will want him, but, you know, will they be cautious or, you know, want some sort of assurances from him? Absolutely, when it comes time to hiring him.
Do you remember those reports right after this happened where it was Bill was going to open up his world to Josh and show him how he does money and show him how he does sort of roster construction and all of that? Did you ever buy that, first of all? And if so, is that actually going to happen? Like, if that's happening, doesn't that sound like a succession plan to you?
No, I mean, no, I didn't buy that stuff that, you know, Bill's all of a sudden opening his world to Josh. He's been, I mean, Josh, when he got hired in Denver, talked about how Bill had brought him more into the fold and things like that. And yes, Josh McDaniels was in the draft room in this draft, which was a change. Was that Belichick or was that the Crafts? That's the question. From what I hear, it was more the Crafts, but, you know, I'm sure, look, if Bill didn't want him in there, he wouldn't have been in there.
Okay, well, we got a number of things I still want to get to with Bedard as it pertains to camp. I mean, you said something to me off the air today, I was talking earlier, about a player down there who was stuck out for you in camp. We'll touch on him. In fact, you know what? We're going to play a little rapid fire with Greg in the last segment here with him before he takes off. We'll do that when we come back.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to Felger and Mass. Before we send Greg Bedard on his way, I have no doubts he'll hit the drive-thru on the way home.
On the way to Sox Yankees.
Yeah, you're going to the game tonight.
Yeah, I'm covering the game.
Nice.
Oh, so there you go.
Triple header today.
So you're on your way to Sox Yankees, and so are we. We'll be talking baseball at 4 o'clock. But before we do that, I want to mention a few things to you. Or we're going to try to keep the answers short here in the last segment, Greg. So I want you to treat this like the 3-minute interview.
Okay.
Define short, Mass.
Well,
I'm not Bert, all right?
Well, no, but you work with McAdam. I mean, like, McAdam's another one. You ask McAdam a simple question. It's like, with all due respect, and I say this with all the love in my heart, honey.
Which means you don't respect him at all.
It's like talking to my wife. I ask my wife, do I have to pick up my son at 5 o'clock? And I get like a 6-minute answer. I'm like, how about just yes or no? I know where to go. And honestly, I know you're busy. Just yes or no will do in any case. So, I've heard a number of people say that the best player in Patriots camp so far has been Stephon Gilmore. True or false?
True.
Okay. Anyone else catch your eye?
Oh, well, what kind of rapid question is that?
Okay, but you asked. But
why don't you ask me specific names, and I'll give you a quick synopsis.
Since you're not going to play along, because you said it to me off the air, Dietrich Wise has also caught
your
attention.
He's been terrific. I thought this could be a sophomore year slump for him, considering basically Belichick pegged him as a pass rush only, can't play the run type of guy. Well, he can play the run, and right now, him and Adrian Claiborne are competing for right end. Right now, I would say that Wise has the inside track to start right now.
How about Sony Michel? Should we be concerned about him?
I don't know if I would be concerned. He's continued. This is the same thing in OTAs. He has not jumped out to me. I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to running backs. That, you know, you better dazzle me, or I wonder why you're here and some guy making $500,000 is not here. He has not jumped out to me. He had one really nice screen pass a couple days ago, but now he's hurt, and that is not good. Rookies need to be on the field, or else that sets them back, even at running back.
And he's had the fumbles, too, on top of it, hasn't he?
Two fumbles, and that was a problem in college, and he will not be on the field if that continues.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
But I'm
right.
Not going to say he's like a bust or anything like that. I mean, they obviously have plans for him, want him in the mix. He's been out there a lot. They get him a lot of touches. He's in their plans. He just, I haven't seen a whole bunch yet.
Just a quick question on Gilmore. Is he going to play the left or the right?
I think he's right.
He played right last year, but now Malcolm Butler's obviously gone. In theory, your left corner is your better corner. Would they move him over there? Or is he going to stay where he is?
They'll be matchup. They're going to be, they have to be man to man to be successful. They'll deal with matchups. I'm not too worried about it. But normally, your best cornerback plays at right cornerback because normally the best receiver is the X on the left side. So that's normally where he would play, especially matching up body-wise against number one receivers.
Okay, based on what I've been reading, Eric Rowe is now the second corner.
Correct. He's been there the whole time.
And the Dawson kid whom they drafted is playing in the slot.
Yep,
do you see it shaking out that way?
As of right now, I mean, because Jonathan Jones and Cyrus Jones haven't come up off a pup. So
good.
It's been very limited. I mean, the only thing is you keep waiting for Jason McCourty to sort of get in the mix, and he has not been in the mix at all.
How about Claiborne? New guy here. Has he been popping on the D-line at all?
He's been okay. He's been up and down. you know, I'm working on a column that I'll be publishing at some point about, like, I think it would be natural for people when you talk about Patriots adding edge guys like they did with Claiborne, saying he's going to help. Well, first of all, he's not that much of a pass rusher, which is fine. He can still bring some pass rush, but that's not his forte. For some people to be like, okay, here, great, Coney Ealy again. Because they brought in Coney Ealy last year, and the guy was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Claiborne has not been that. It's just been that Dietrich Wise has been that good. And the coming from a guy who said he was going to be a star like the second week of camp last year, he's even surprised me.
So I've seen this written in more than one place. And in fact, you even wrote something related to this last weekend, I believe, as it pertained to Patrick Chung in the secondary. Because yep. Chung's largely a run stopper, right?
But, yes, and matching up against tight ends. Yeah.
Okay, but on the defensive line now, between Danny Shelton, or the acquisition of Danny Shelton, really, he and Lawrence Guy have been getting the first team reps at yep. defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Malcolm Brown has been bumped back to Vincent Valentine. Are they squeezing out Malcolm Brown? Is that already what you're getting here?
It's very possible. I mean, I would say that Malcolm Brown has not had a great camp to this point. Shelton has looked pretty good, pretty nimble. He's also done decently in pass rush drills, which you don't think you're going to get with him. And I don't think he's not going to be a three down player. He's a two down player. But then all of a sudden they come in with, normally their sub package is Trey Flowers. Adam Butler gets back into the mix. Wise and Claiborne's been there the past day or so, but I don't know if that's going to hold up.
Assuming that Trent Brown is your guy at left tackle, do we have an opening at right tackle now? It seems like Marcus Cannon's missing a lot of camp here.
I mean, it's not a good sign in my mind that, you know, he missed the balance of last year, had some sort of procedure on his ankle, foot, and then, you know, all of a sudden this year he missed one day. It looked like it was maybe just hydration or heat or whatever, and then he limped off the field with his left foot yesterday. And it's not a good sign. And, you know, that left tackle's in flux, or, you know, you don't know what you have at left tackle. You figured you'd be able to count on Marcus Cannon, who, when he's healthy, is one of the best right tackles in the league. If all of a sudden that is up for grabs, now what do? Do you stick LaAdrian Waddle there? Or do you say, you know, Isaiah Wynn is a guy we spent a first-round draft pick on. If he's the backup left tackle, why can't he start at right tackle? And then what does that mean for Shaq Mason, who maybe you're going to kick Wynn inside and trade Shaq Mason in his contract year, all that stuff. It's not good that Marcus Cannon is not out there for a bunch of different reasons.
Okay, so Malcolm Brown, again, it feels like they're greasing the skids for him.
Quite possibly. I mean, him and Shaq Mason are in their contract years, and you just wonder, you know, is Malcolm – you look at how much they have in the interior, it would be easy to say, okay, somebody gets an injury in camp, they need help on the interior – Malcolm Brown would seem to be a smart trade. I mean, I wouldn't like to see that. I like Malcolm Brown a lot, but you never know.
Okay, so again, I was just going to say that you think something similar may be going on then potentially with Shaq Mason. Yeah,
I think you cannot rule it out that either or both of those guys are traded.
Okay, what about the idea of Isaiah Wynn supplanting my guy Joe Tooney at left guard?
Yeah, you hate Tooney.
I think he stinks.
I think Tooney's fine.
Oh, God.
It's possible. I will just say that the only place we've seen Isaiah Wynn so far in camp is left tackle. So, you know, I don't know if they just want to get him a solid foundation and then they might move him a little bit. He will be moved at some point. Dante likes to do that. Him and Bill both like to do that on purpose to see what they have and get the versatility going. But right now he's just a left tackle. Maybe that they think that's all he can handle right now. And then later on they change that up.
And anything on the rule changes, any sort of emphasis there, Bill getting guys together, film room, anything like that?
Not that I've been able to see. I mean, I think the new kickoff rules are going to be to the Patriots' advantage, and I think that's a big reason why they brought Patterson in here, because I do think there are going to be a lot of return kicks. I don't think this rule change is going to work how the NFL thinks it is going to. And I think that's going to be good for the Patriots.
Because there are going to be more teams that do what the Patriots did, which is to pop those kicks down to the 2-yard line. Yep.
So, I mean, but, you know, if you do that, you know, to counteract that, you need a good returner. And the Patriots finally went out and got arguably the best in the league.
Okay, last question before we let you go. And I admit this is just a curiosity on my part because I haven't seen anything written about this guy. He was the highest pick that the Patriots had last year in Derek Rivers. Is Derek Rivers going to be a contributor for them or not?
He'll be a contributor. I have not been wowed by him at all in this training camp, but I think he's going to be out there. He'll be a contributor. He'll be in the mix. I just don't know. We'll have to see how he does, especially I want to see him in the games. I want to see how he does once the preseason starts.
I mean, he is their highest draft pick from 2017,
mm-hmm.
right? And he obviously got hurt, missed the whole season.
Yeah.
And so I've seen nothing about him. And it's like he's been wiped off the face of the earth. And you'd like to think they got something out of their highest pick in that draft, even if it was in the third round.
Yep.
So in any case, I just thought I would bring that one up. Greg, very much appreciated.
No problem. Thanks, bud.
Okay, welcome to, and how do you like our new studios, by the way? Pretty good?
It's pretty nice.
Stylish.
Yeah.
Stylish. Very much
pain
so.
Pain in the butt commute.
Okay. No, tell me about it. It's all right. I'm not complaining about that.
We're not allowed to talk about that, I don't think.
We are in our longest commercial-free segment here on Felger and Maz. Sean Silver has your headlines, and then we'll get to Red Sox and Yankees. Big four-game series starts tonight at Fenway Park, and the owner of the team had some very interesting comments, one in particular, in today's Boston Globe. We're going to start there.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.